The Speaker of the Nova Scotia House of Assembly grants permission to record the televised proceedings of the legislature for use in schools and for other purposes, such as private study, research, review, or newspaper summary. Television and radio broadcasters may make use of recorded excerpts of the televised proceedings in their news or public affairs programs for the purpose of fair and accurate reports of proceedings. Program material may not be used for political party advertising, election campaigns, or any other politically partisan activity. Program material may not be edited for use in promotional material by any political party or other organization, and may not be used in any edited form that could mislead or misinform an audience or viewer, or which does not present a balanced portrayal of the proceedings in the House. Video program material may only be used with its original audio components, and no other audio material may be added to video material used. Any other commercial use or rebroadcast of these proceedings requires the express written approval of the Speaker.
A Bright Business Award for outstanding delivery of services, solutions, or education related to energy efficiency. Therefore, be it resolved that all members of this House of Assembly congratulate Dwayne McDonald and Trinity Maintenance Solutions on earning this prestigious award. Mr. Speaker, I request waiver of notice and passage without debate.
There has been a request for waiver. Is it agreed? It is agreed. Would all those in favour of the motion please say aye.
Aye.
Contrary minded, nay. Motion is carried. Barring no more notices of motion, we'll now move on to oral questions put by members to ministers. The time is now 2:52. We'll conclude at 3:52. The Honourable Leader of the Official Opposition.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. My question is to the Premier, and it's on the topic of public security. But just before I ask it, I do want to take a moment, in light of the events in downtown Halifax today, and commend the Halifax Regional Police Service, our peace officers, and all those that were involved in handling a security threat downtown and bringing it to a resolution where an individual was arrested. I'm sure all members of the House are thankful for the work that they did here in our own capital city this morning. Mr. Speaker, we all watched in shock yesterday at the tragic events that unfolded in our nation's capital, only to find out today we have a threat right here in Halifax, Mr. Speaker. The tragic events in Ottawa and the threat today don't stop us, however, from doing our job. The work of government goes on, Mr. Speaker, and in so doing, we reaffirm our unbending commitment to our democratic institutions. Mr. Speaker, I'd like to ask the Premier if he could update the House and all Nova Scotians about any enhanced plans that are in place in light of today's events to protect public safety.
The Honourable Premier.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, I want to thank the Honourable Member for the question. I also want to recognize the tremendous work done by the law enforcement personnel across our province. The events of yesterday in Ottawa, caused all of us to pause and recognize we're at a moment in time. We're not sure how much things are going to change, but we know they're going to change for sure. The response from Rear Admiral Newton, and who's in charge of the Maritime Command, Atlantic Command, has been ongoing. They have put in place protocols to ensure that military personnel, as they move about doing their daily routine, can do so in a safe, secure environment. I want to thank the public who have been notifying law enforcement officers whenever something looks out of the ordinary, and the response that we've seen today tells us all that the protocols put in place will ensure the safety of the citizens of the province. For those who work for government and government institutions, government buildings, we have put across under the leadership of Deputy Minister Darrow. They will be doing a complete security check of all buildings that fall under the purview of the province of Nova Scotia.
The Honourable Leader of the Official Opposition.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and I want to thank the Premier for that answer. Mr. Speaker, Halifax is a port city. We have an important airport, of course, the seaport. Many people call on Halifax to gain entry to our country, Mr. Speaker. My question to the Premier is, will he advise the House, and through the House all Nova Scotians, on any enhanced measures he's aware of to protect public safety through our international airport and seaport?
The Honourable Premier.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I do want to acknowledge that there is and has been no imminent threat from that we're hearing from Ottawa regarding directly to military bases here or indeed the province. We have, when I spoke to Rear Admiral Newton, that would fall under his leadership. At this moment in time, they're doing as they have been doing with all of the aspects related to the port, ensuring that the safety of not only the personnel on that base, but indeed the area, Mr. Speaker. But we as a province have leaned on the great leadership of Rear Admiral Newton and the Canadian Armed Forces when it comes to depending and defining the level of security required in our harbour.
The Honourable Leader of the Official Opposition on his final supplementary.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and I appreciate the Premier's answer. Mr. Speaker, all Nova Scotians are, and all Canadians are mourning the tragic deaths of soldiers Patrice Vincent and Nathan Carrillo, and looking to ensure that our Canadian forces themselves are protected. Halifax itself is home to a major naval base, a major army installations, among others, Mr. Speaker. I'd like to ask the Premier if he can advise the House and all Nova Scotians on any enhanced measures he can share to protect the members of the Canadian Army, the Royal Canadian Navy, and the Royal Canadian Air Force who are serving here in Halifax.
The Honourable Premier.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I want to thank the Honourable Member for the question. I think there's no doubt all of us, first of all, want to commend the tremendous work being done by members of the Canadian Armed Forces. As the leader of the Conservative Party would know, the direction that those members of the forces would follow would be from their command. And in this case, Rear Admiral Newton would be in charge not only the Navy, but indeed the entire military operation here at Atlantic Canada. It's been recently put out that members of the force have been given the option to report to work in civilian clothes. They've been encouraged out of the boat and when they're in military uniform to use caution. We know that access to military bases has been enhanced, but again, they feel, and through the support that they have, that the risk to their personnel and to Nova Scotians is low. And we can all rest assured that citizens are doing their part to alerting military personnel and law enforcement when things are out of the ordinary. And again, one of the things I know my family was grateful for, and I'm sure all members' families in this house, once we heard word this morning that there was an incident going on in the proximity of downtown, that the law enforcement responded in such a professional and quick manner, and the protocols in place worked to protect all of us.
The Honourable Leader of the New Democratic Party.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, my question through you is to the Premier. Mr. Speaker, in last year's election, the Premier and his Liberal Party promised Nova Scotians that if they were elected government, they would end corporate welfare. In fact, and I'll table this shortly, Mr. Speaker, it's the section on economic development in the Liberal Party platform. Yesterday, Mr. Speaker, the Minister for Economic Development in the Liberal government announced new tax breaks for large corporations amounting to $30 million, Mr. Speaker. So my question to the Premier is this. Why has the Premier decided to break his promise to end corporate welfare?
The Honourable Premier.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I want to thank the Honourable Member for the question. And this government did exactly what it was said it was going to do, Mr. Speaker. It was going to take the checkbook out of the hands of Cabinet, Mr. Speaker. We all saw what happened when the previous government was in power, Mr. Speaker, and continued to write check after check after check with no job guarantee and no commitment to the people of the province of Nova Scotia. What the Minister of Economic and Rural Development announced today, Mr. Speaker, was a tax initiative, Mr. Speaker, that would only be paid out to the manufacturing sector across this province after they have made the entire investment on their own right, Mr. Speaker. The entire The entire investment would be made, Mr. Speaker, by the company, and only after that fact, Mr. Speaker, would they be eligible for this tax credit. This is a direct incentive, Mr. Speaker, for manufacturing and export opportunities in this province, the very thing that this province needs to continue to do to drive good economic opportunity and to support the private sector who are making the investments, not like the previous government did, which continued to write blank checks to anyone who asked.
The Honourable Leader of the New Democratic Party.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. Well, Mr. Speaker, the Liberal platform also said that in addition to ending corporate welfare, if elected government, what the Premier and his party would do would be to refocus on small business. Mr. Speaker, this is Small Business Week. The announcement of the tax incentive yesterday, the tax giveaways, was to the large corporations, Mr. Speaker. So I'm wondering if the Premier would explain what he has to say to the small business owners in the province who believe that he and his government would end corporate welfare when in fact they see a new $30 million tax giveaway to large corporations.
The Honourable Premier.
Good, Mr. Speaker, and I want to thank the Honourable Member for the question. What I would say to small business owners is that we responded very early in our mandate by increasing the small business loan in conjunction with the credit union, Mr. Speaker. We went from guaranteeing that commitment to small businesses from 75% to 90% across the board, Mr. Speaker. Very early on in our mandate, we ensured that they had the capital to invest in their businesses and that they knew that their government was going to be a partner with them. The Minister of Economic and Rural Development has been talking and will be introducing legislation that will provide an opportunity to young Nova Scotians who can find an employer that will hire them. And the program is called Graduate to Opportunities, Mr. Speaker. It's a direct impact to keep more young people in this province. We've invested in research opportunities in this province. We've broadened the apprenticeship opportunities. All those things are positive news for small businesses across this province, and this government will continue to work with all employers to ensure that every possibility to keep young people in this province will be maintained.
The Honourable Leader of the New Democratic Party on her final supplementary.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. Well, Mr. Speaker, the signature promise of that Premier and that party was to end corporate welfare in the province of Nova Scotia and refocus on small business, Mr. Speaker. And Mr. Speaker, the announcement yesterday is a breaking of that signature promise, Mr. Speaker. So, Mr. Speaker, I want to now ask the Premier through you, will he now admit that he never had any intention of ending corporate welfare when he crisscrossed this province from one end to the other in last year's election, Mr. Speaker?
The Honourable Premier.
I want to thank the leader of the Democratic Party for the performance. But the reality is, Mr. Speaker, we've kept our commitment to the people of this province, Mr. Speaker. We've invested in small businesses by ensuring that we provided capital that they could invest in their business, and we helped support them, Mr. Speaker. And we're going to continue to do so not only in this budget, but every budget as long as we're given the privilege to be the governor of this province. Mr. Speaker, we're going to continue, Mr. Speaker, to provide opportunity for young Nova Scotians to work in here, providing incentives to employers to hire young Nova Scotians by broadening the apprenticeship opportunities, by investing in research opportunities. We'll continue to drive job growth. But let me be clear, Mr. Speaker, unlike the New Democratic Party, we will support large businesses, Mr. Speaker. They will have to invest their own money. When this crowd was in power, Mr. Speaker, they wrote a blank check. What we're doing, Mr. Speaker, is saying to the company, you invest. On the tax side, we'll help.
The Honourable Leader of the Official Opposition.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. We're all appreciative of the work that our law enforcement officers, our peace officers, our Canadian Forces personnel and others have done all the time, Mr. Speaker, certainly yesterday in Ottawa and today here in Halifax. Now, Mr. Speaker, it will soon be time for us to do our job. And that is to make sure they have the tools they need to do their job and updated and modernized protocols so they can do their job best and as safe as possible, Mr. Speaker. I understand the Premier has indicated that a security expert will be hired to look at the protocols around our public buildings, whether they're the port or the City Hall or even Province House here. Mr. Speaker, I'd like to ask the Premier to share with the House what he can about the work of this security expert.
The Honourable Premier.
Mr. Speaker, what I said was that under the leadership of Deputy Minister Darrow, there will be a committee struck to look at the security in public buildings. They will determine who they need to rely on to bring in to have a look. We do, as the member would know, very fortunate here in Nova Scotia to have the Navy just down the street with a tremendous amount of resources. We have, we're the home to H Division here as part of our national police force. We saw the response today by Halifax Regional Police Force when it came to the incident that took place. We're very blessed to have partners who have expertise inside of their respective institutions. We will be relying on all of them. To be part of this ongoing look at security to ensure that people can go to and from work in this province in a safe manner. As we all know, 99.9% of the time it is not an issue, but we need to be vigilant to ensure that the incidents that took place yesterday in Ottawa do not have the ability to be repeated in other parts of our province or indeed the country.
The Honourable Leader of the Official Opposition.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Last week in Banff, Canada's public safety minister actually talked about this new threat of homegrown terrorism, Mr. Speaker, where native-born Canadians who have become radicalized are a new and emerging threat in our country. And sure enough, we saw exactly that yesterday in our nation's capital, Mr. Speaker. Often they are targeting public institutions. Downtown Halifax contains a number of our provincial public institutions, many of them, and thousands of Nova Scotians literally work in these places. Mr. Speaker, so I'll ask the Premier whether the security review done by the security expert will include a look at this new threat, although there is no existing threat today, Mr. Speaker, I hope not anyway, this new threat of homegrown terrorism.
The Honourable Premier.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. They'll have an opportunity to look at the security of the institutions. They'll, I'm sure, review the protocols that were used today in terms of when buildings were locked down to make sure how quickly we become safe. But I do want to I was moved, quite frankly, today when I had a good fortune of watching the proceedings in Parliament Hill when I heard the Prime Minister, the leader of the Democratic Party, and the leader of the Liberal Party speak and talk about what took place yesterday in Ottawa, and all of them, to a person, spoke about what an inclusive, multicultural country we have, how proud that all of us should be of that, and how proud I know all of us are of that, and continue to recognize that what happened yesterday, Mr. Speaker, was a criminal act by a sick individual. And it should be directly pointed at that criminal act and that sick individual and not, Mr. Speaker, as it's being radicalized in some cases because it does none of us good to head in that direction. I had the good fortune, Mr. Speaker, I know I'm going beyond my time, but it's important to say this. Today I went to our Office of Immigration because what took place in Halifax took place outside of their windows, and there was an employee at our province of Muslim descent. Who wanted to tell me how proud he was to be a Canadian, to be in this province, and how proud he is of his Muslim heritage, Mr. Speaker. And I couldn't tell you how proud I was to be able to tell him, how proud I was to have him as a member of the public service, how proud I was of him that he has the ability to worship in this country, how he sees fit. And we will do everything we can to make sure that we continue to remain a vigilant, multicultural society so that all of us can continue to worship as the way we and our families feel most comfortable.
The Honourable Leader of the Official Opposition on his final supplementary.
Well, thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. And in the interest of the great country that we have, let me just add very briefly to the Premier's remarks that we're all proud that Canada is a country of freedoms where anyone in the world can come and live and worship and earn a living as they please, Mr. Speaker, and that's why so many millions of people around the world admire the country that we have built here in Canada and here in Nova Scotia. Mr. Speaker, the fact that we have all come together as one, whether it's on Parliament Hill yesterday and this morning or here in this chamber today, is because we all want to make the case clearly in a united way, whether you're in government or opposition, that no one should jump to conclusions, that every Canadian citizen deserves full and equal protection under the law, including the presumption of innocence, that this country seeks out sick individuals, as the Premier put it, specifically, so that all of us, whether they're Muslim or Jewish or Christian or otherwise, can live in freedom, Mr. Speaker. Well, it's the very same point the Premier was making in his speech just a moment ago. And, Mr. Speaker, we are united on this. That's why we're asking these questions about public safety. My final question to the Premier, Mr. Speaker, is this. We've now had a test of the public communication system. Reaching members of the general public at times like this is very important. And I will ask the Premier if he is satisfied that our public communications in times like this are up to date and able to handle these situations, or whether they will also be included in a review by the security expert.
The Honourable Premier.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I do want to thank the leader of the Conservative Party for his remarks leading into the question. I want to assure him that the review will look at the institutions and the protocols that took place by government agencies, but we all know that whenever an incident of any type happens to our large institutions, Canadian Military, Royal Canadian Mounted Police, the Halifax Regional Police Force, all of those are looked at in a review to just for best practices, our way that we can improve. So I'm sure that will be part of it. One of the things that happened yesterday as the events in Ottawa were unfolding was, and I think all of us should be proud of this, the level of collaboration that took place by the police forces across this province, calling in chiefs of police in communities across the province and as being part of that, the Canadian military. Mr. Speaker, yesterday was a time when we saw the very best in our public institutions and how proud all of us should be, and I know the leader of the Conservative Party would echo this, how proud all of us should be at the way they responded, not in the with their eyes on the particular government or agency they're part of, but in the common good of all of us. And they did so and showed great leadership. And that's why you saw what happened today end as quickly as I think any of us could have hoped for it to do so.
The Honourable Leader of the New Democratic Party.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, my question to you is to the Premier. Mr. Speaker, under the Liberal government, Nova Scotia has lost close to 9,000 jobs, and no demographic has been harder hit than new graduates. And Mr. Speaker, as the IVNI report states, one of the ways we can help keep young people from leaving our province is to create more apprenticeship opportunities. Mr. Speaker, I think we can all agree that ensuring that our young apprentices and graduates are given more opportunities is a good thing. And I know the Liberal government is building on the work of the previous government in this regard. So, Mr. Speaker, my question for the Premier is this. Can he tell the House what his plan is to create more apprenticeship opportunities for young Nova Scotians?
The Honourable Premier.
Mr. Speaker, I'm sure the Honourable Member would know that it is the responsibility of government to provide the apprenticeship opportunities, why ratios have been changed. Those changes are taking place in cooperation with private sector, Mr. Speaker. We're very proud of the fact that we're the only province that has been able to reach an agreement with the province of Alberta when it comes to recognizing both educational requirements in our provinces, as well as, Mr. Speaker, recognizing that we will count the hours earned in our respective provinces. As I want to say to all young Nova Scotians who are working outside of this province today, that we provided mobility under the legislation that's coming forward, that you don't have to stay in Alberta for 5 years, Mr. Speaker. The 2 years you may be there will count back in this province, and the hours will count back in this province. But let me be clear. It will be the private sector, Mr. Speaker, that will provide those opportunities. We will set the framework.
The Honourable Leader of the New Democratic Party.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and I want to thank the Premier for his answer. But, Mr. Speaker, when it comes to plans, the Liberal government in opposition, their members were very clear on the need for plans with targets. The now Minister of Transportation, for example, told Metro News on November 25th, 2011, and I quote, "From our perspective, if there are no targets in a plan, there's no plan." And I'll table that, Mr. Speaker. So, Mr. Speaker, just so this House can be assured that the Liberal government does indeed have a real plan for apprenticeship, can the Premier tell this House what specific targets his government has set for new apprenticeship opportunities over the next 3 years?
The Honourable Premier.
Mr. Speaker, what I think the leader, I was going to call you the leader, what I was thinking the Minister of Transportation, what I think the Minister of Transportation, Mr. Speaker, he would be, Mr. Speaker. He'd be the second, he'd probably be the second best one in the House, Mr. Speaker. Speaker, but I know what he was referring to, Mr. Speaker, is that this government spent so much time, Mr. Speaker, trying to take credit for fictitious jobs, Mr. Speaker, that what we were looking for was to identify where the real jobs were. What we've created, Mr. Speaker, is an opportunity for the private sector to broaden the possibilities for apprentices in this province. We've created an arrangement with Alberta, Mr. Speaker, that will allow the flow of young men and women who are working between our provinces. And Mr. Speaker, just for the record in this House, all members will get an opportunity to see the next phase of that when the Minister of Labour and Advanced Education introduces a bill tomorrow.
The Honourable Leader of the New Democratic Party on her final supplementary.
Thank you very much. Well, we'll see how fictitious the jobs are when that government starts taking credit for jobs in the shipyards, Mr. Speaker, over the next few years. Mr. Speaker, on the heels of cutting the graduate retention rebate, which imposed the largest tax increase in our province's history on new grads, yesterday the Liberals announced a $30 million tax break for big corporations, Mr. Speaker. So my question for the Premier is this. Why aren't companies required to hire a specific number of apprentices and new grads in order to be eligible for the Liberal government's new large tax break for corporations?
The Honourable Premier.
Mr. Speaker, I want to thank the Honourable Member for the question. I do want to clarify a few points she made, Mr. Speaker. What happened this government stopped the graduate retention rebate program, Mr. Speaker, because it actually was not retaining people in this province. We did not claw it back, Mr. Speaker. We stopped it. Mr. Speaker, but the largest tax increase on all Nova Scotians was the 2% hike that government did on the HST, Mr. Speaker, which was $400 million, Mr. Speaker. And I hear someone yelling, why don't you take it off, Mr. Speaker, because we're trying to pay the credit card that they ran out. But let me assure the Honourable Member, Mr. Speaker, this government will not try to take credit for jobs that are created down at the Irving Shipyard. We will put the credit exactly where it is by the hardworking men and women. What we opposed, Mr. Speaker, was the blank check they wrote unnecessarily, Mr. Speaker. That's what we opposed. Mr. Speaker.
The Honourable Member for Pictou East.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. My question today is for the Minister of the Environment. Last week, we learned that Paul Sobey, a well-respected and prominent businessman, had independent soil samples taken and tests conducted regarding concerns over the effluent that flows into Boat Harbour. Mr. Sobey offered these results to the minister, but he was told no. The government had tried to frustrate Mr. Sobey's efforts to get the samples to begin with, and when he got them anyway and offered them to them, he was told that they were not interested and that they should instead give the results to Northern Pulp. Mr. Speaker, I can't for the life of me figure out why the minister would not be interested in looking at these test results. So my question today is, why does the minister not believe that independent test results that Paul Sobey generated are worthy of consideration?
The Honourable Minister of the Environment.
Mr. Speaker, I'd like to thank the member opposite for the question. Obviously, an issue of great concern for the people in and around his riding, Mr. Speaker. With respect to the tests that are in question there, I'm not aware of where and when Mr. Sobey brought those tests to the department. I am aware of some correspondence with another individual in the community involved with that same group of people conducting that testing work, who did write to me advising me of these test results, and I wrote the individual back in, I believe, September of this year, indicating that they should bring those test results to our office in Pictou, officially Granton area in Pictou County. And I've checked with the office and have no record of that. Recently, after the news reports where Mr. Sobey did bring to the attention that there was apparently some indication that there was no interest in those test results, Mr. Speaker, there was an individual from the government of Nova Scotia that did follow up with Mr. Sobey, had conversations with him, advised him to bring that information, those test results, to our attention, because, of course, we would like to take a look at all information and evidence that's pertinent to the work that we're doing here, Mr. Speaker. Thank you.
The Honourable Member for Pictou East.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and I thank the Minister for that answer. It's refreshing to hear him say that he is interested in information, because certainly the perception is out there that the government is not really interested in talking to people, not interested in doing everything possible to remedy the Boat Harbour situation. In fact, the government has refused to conduct public meetings with regards to Boat Harbour. They won't talk to people in the full community, and it's unclear what actions or what interactions the minister has had with representatives from the mill. So my question today is, has the minister ever visited Boat Harbour or personally met with senior mill management firsthand?
The Honourable Minister of the Environment.
Mr. Speaker, first and foremost, since we're talking specifically about Boat Harbour, I would like to look back at the members' Facebook posts during the June incident that took place, Mr. Speaker, where he questioned my honourability with respect to dealing with this situation. Yet only a few days later, Mr. Speaker, we achieved a historic agreement with the representatives, the Chief and Council of Pictou Landing First Nation. We brought to end a peaceful resolution, an historic resolution to the situation that was taking place at that time, Mr. Speaker. It was an agreement that was favourable to the band and council and the members of Pictou Landing First Nation, Mr. Speaker. We certainly haven't been hiding from information or being accessible or available to comment on this, Mr. Speaker. In fact, right now there are ongoing community consultations taking place, open houses, Mr. Speaker, being hosted by the proponent, Northern Pulp, as well as there's going to be additional consultation on the industrial approval, Mr. Speaker. All work that's never been done, never been open and accessible by any government in the past that I'm aware of, Mr. Speaker. This government, my department, under my watch, Mr. Speaker, is being more accessible, more open, and more transparent on this file than ever before.
The Honourable Member for Pictou East on his final supplementary.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I know the minister likes to take credit for historic and monumental agreements, but we've seen no results. My second supplemental will be for the premier. I understand from his answer that he hasn't met with the mill people and he hasn't been to Boat Harbour. So last week I asked the minister about the makeup of his Boat Harbour committee and whether the minister would consider adding a few more community voices to that committee to round it out. He said no. There are no plans to change that composition of that, no plans to listen to the broader community. The minister certainly gives the impression that he has all the answers and he has his blinders on. He does not wish to speak to Nova Scotians. He won't talk to mill management. He has no interest in the results of tests that are brought forward. So my question today for the Premier is, will the Premier intervene and give this file to someone who is willing to let the people be heard and us collectively search for a solution to Boat Harbour?
The Honourable Premier.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, first of all, I want to correct the Honourable Member. In his answer, he suggested that the minister was opposed to letting people on the panel. Exactly what he said, Mr. Speaker, is that panel has been struck. There's been ongoing work that is down the road, Mr. Speaker. It would set this process back. Mr. Speaker, we are committed to Pictou Landing, the people of Pictou County, indeed all Nova Scotia, to deal with this environmental challenge that is in Boat Harbour. Successive governments, Mr. Speaker, have turned away from it. I want to tell you, when that blockade was happening, no wonder Chief Paul was suspicious of governments. Because of the way they were treated in Pictou Landing by Conservative governments in the past, Mr. Speaker, promise after promise, Mr. Speaker, the Minister of Environment did the right thing. He went to Pictou Landing. He met with Chief Paul. He met with citizens of the community. Mr. Speaker, he ended that blockade to ensure it happened in a peaceful way. But let me add this. We've made a commitment to clean up Boat Harbour. Time after time, members from Pictou stand up in this House asking us to cut this tax, cut that tax, fix that classroom, Mr. Speaker, clean up Boat Harbour, fix the mill. They can't have it both ways, Mr. Speaker. They better decide, Mr. Speaker, whether they're going to stand up and support a government that is working with the people of Pictou County, or they're only going to stand up for the self-interest of the leader of their party, Mr. Speaker.
Just before we move on to the next question, real quick, we're just over a half hour in and we've just got five complete questions. So in anticipation of next week, where we're going to go down to 45 seconds for question and answer, we're roughly double here. So let's use the last half hour to practice our shorter questions. The Honourable Leader of the New Democratic Party.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. I'll be as quick as I can. Mr. Speaker, my question through you is to the Minister of Finance. Mr. Speaker, earlier this year, the Minister ordered a tax review, but in the meantime, this government has continued to cut tax rebates or introduce new corporate tax breaks. For example, Mr. Speaker, in April, the Minister announced the largest tax increase in the history of our province for young graduates when she eliminated the graduate retention rebate. So, Mr. Speaker, my question through you to the Minister is, why did the Minister spend $100,000 to hire someone to do a tax review if she wasn't going to wait for the review to be complete before making changes to tax policy?
The Honourable Minister of Finance.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker, and I'm pleased to answer the question about the tax review. In fact, Mr. Speaker, our tax system that we have in place today is a complete mishmash or hodgepodge of tax policies over many, many years. It's never been reviewed, and we're having a look at all the tax credits and all of the tax rates to see how we can best stimulate the economy or help Nova Scotians, essentially help make Nova Scotia a better place. So, Mr. Speaker, that is why we're doing a complete review of all of the taxes.
The Honourable Leader of the New Democratic Party.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker, and I thank the Minister for her response. Mr. Speaker, the graduate retention rebate was worth $50 million this year. And yesterday, the government announced $30 million in new corporate tax breaks for large corporations. Perhaps it was the minister's plan all along to use the graduate retention rebate funding to support the government's new corporate tax giveaway. So my question for the minister is this. Why does she think that big business deserves a tax break more than Nova Scotian graduates who carry the highest student debt load in the country?
The Honourable Minister of Finance.
Mr. Speaker, the member is mistaken in her linking of any of these taxes and credits. The credit that was announced yesterday for business is a credit after they make a large investment on productivity, on improvements. It will only be offered when there has been that investment in capital equipment and improvements. Mr. Speaker, that's very important. If Mr. Speaker, I know you're not looking for long answers this afternoon, but I would like to mention that on the graduate retention rebate, it was clear that that was a program that did not work to do what it was set out to do. And for that reason, we cannot afford to have a continued support for things that don't work. We've reinvested in other ways, which I know that you have heard about in the past. Thank you.
The Honourable Leader of the New Democratic Party on her final supplementary.
Well, thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, the graduate retention rebate resulted in 1,600 more students being in the province between 2009 and 2011, Mr. Speaker. So, Mr. Speaker, the tax review...
Order, please.
The Honourable Leader of the New Democratic Party has the floor.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, the tax review the minister ordered is due at the end of the month, and students and graduates I talk to remain hopeful that the $50 million in funding that was so quickly snatched away from them will be reinvested in programs for young graduates and students. Can the minister tell this House whether or not any of this funding will be reinvested in programs for students and young graduates, Mr. Speaker?
The Honourable Minister of Finance.
Mr. Speaker, I think it's important to note that the member opposite has again raised the question that came out of the briefing note, which I have raised a point of privilege about. She's again misleading the House in saying that the briefing note insinuates that there was a retention. Mr. Speaker, the briefing note says very clearly that one might be mistaken to think that that was the number, but that there were many other factors that led to that small number of students staying, and it was not because our province had a graduate retention rebate. I wish the member would read it again with her eyes wide open and pay attention to it.
Order, please. Order. The Honourable House Leader for the Official Opposition.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. I recently met with representatives from Rethink Breast Cancer, an organization designed to raise awareness and support young women with breast cancer. These women also met with the Deputy Minister of Health that day to discuss plans to incorporate a test called Oncotype DX. It's a diagnostic test in our healthcare system. Who doesn't know exactly what that is, I'll table that as well. Most women are overwhelmed when the time comes to decide on a course of treatment, and this test can prevent needless chemotherapy. It's been approved and recommended by the Breast Disease Site Group in Nova Scotia and is utilized in six other provinces. A decision on whether or not it will be utilized in Nova Scotia has been pending for more than a year. So, Mr. Speaker, can the Minister of Health tell us when we can expect a decision on this test?
The Honourable Minister of Health.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. And what I can tell the Honourable Member is that currently we have about 14 cancer drugs that are on our list that we are working through in order to be able to get those in the queue for the appropriate treatments. And that's one of the ones that we will be looking at to be able to provide.
The Honourable House Leader for the Official Opposition.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. And it's not a drug; it's a test that can be done. So, Rethink Breast Cancer tells that Nova Scotia is lagging behind in offering this test to women. We are one of the last provinces in the country to make a decision on funding. It's estimated that 175 women in our province could benefit from Oncotype DX. The cost is minimal compared to forcing women to undergo costly and potentially unnecessary treatments. So there's an opportunity to save these patients from having endure terrible side effects of chemotherapy and keep them in our hospitals. And it would, of course, benefit all sides on a savings as well as a better value of life for those members. Does the minister agree that this would be a great benefit to Nova Scotians?
The Honourable Minister of Health.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. And I was thinking about a briefing that I just had on a breast cancer drug that extends life for anywhere from 3 to 6 months. And of course, with young with mothers or with anybody, that still is important to be able to fund. But the member opposite is talking about a test that can be beneficial. And the Deputy Minister has brought this to my attention, and it'll be one of those areas that we will be taking a look at. I think on the prevention side, the more we can do, that indeed is good medicine.
The Honourable House Leader for the Official Opposition.
Thank you very much, and I appreciate the answer from the Minister. You know, a study that was conducted in BC found that 30%, there was a 30% change in the original treatment recommendations once they used this diagnostic test. Ontario has funded this test since 2010 and has reported a success rate of 97%. This could make the lives of women diagnosed with breast cancer much easier. In such a difficult time, the healthcare system should have the resources it needs to most appropriately assign a treatment plan. So my final question, comment to the minister, you know, can he be making a decision sooner than later? I would like to see it by the end of this this session, but of course I hope that he does it as quickly as possible.
The Honourable Minister of Health.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. This was a topic of discussion. In fact, just yesterday, when I went to the 20th anniversary of Breast Cancer Action Nova Scotia in Bedford, and one of the areas that one of the research scientists that was there was telling me, in fact, the number of very young women in our province, 20s, 30-year-olds, in fact, that are being diagnosed with breast cancer, and in fact, the course of treatment is very, very significant for their futures. So I thank the member opposite for raising this issue, and we'll see where we go with this in very short order.
The Honourable Member for Queen's Shelburne.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, my question is for the Minister of Natural Resources. Mr. Speaker, the issue of the shortage of firewood continues to grow, and we all know that it is getting colder. Mr. Speaker, this month the Minister acknowledged the issue, but left the onus on the private sector, saying, and I quote, "Our ability to interfere in the current market factors is limited," end quote. And I will table that from Hansard. Limited, Mr. Speaker, but not non-existent. Mr. Speaker, my question to the Minister is, what is his plan this winter if residents are unable to get access to affordable firewood to heat their homes?
The Honourable Minister of Natural Resources.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Thank you for the question, Member, and I appreciate him tabling that quote, Mr. Speaker, because that is absolutely true. What we're faced with is a market condition that is resulting from the contraction of the forestry sector. There's enough wood out there to be cut, Mr. Speaker. There's not enough people cutting the wood. We've done what we can to support the situation by opening up Crown lands to tender for firewood specifically, and that resulted in mixed success, Mr. Speaker. If the member opposite has any further suggestions about what the Crown can do to help this particular situation, we're all ears.
The Honourable Member for Queen's Shelburne.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker, and I ask the Minister to pay complete attention to the following second part here. Mr. Speaker, the Minister has said himself that he is concerned with the current shortage. The Bowater's lands was purchased for recreational use as well as commercial use. We don't have a shortage of suppliers, Mr. Speaker. We have a shortage, I repeat, a shortage of access to Crown land when we need it the most. Mr. Speaker, my question to the Minister is, will you give the existing firewood suppliers access to these lands to meet the demand and soon to be a critical need for firewood?
The Honourable Minister of Natural Resources.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. We actually have opened up Crown lands to tender, as I mentioned in my previous answer. That was met with mixed success. In the area that that member currently represents, there was a tender issued. Because of the lack of contractors that we have, there were no bids placed on that tender. Mr. Speaker, again, we are very concerned about this issue and the impact of people in their homes and their ability to heat their homes. If the member does have any concrete advice or suggestions, solutions to other ways the Crown can be involved in supporting this particular issue, again, we're all ears, Mr. Speaker.
The Honourable Member for Queens Shelburne on his final supplementary.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. In the words of the wood suppliers in the southern part of Nova Scotia, the tenders that the minister is referring to that he issued this August is simply garbage or window dressing. And it doesn't accommodate the need what I'm trying to address here today. Mr. Speaker, we can't wait and see or have a wait-and-see approach when it comes to the health and the safety of families. We just can't do that. Mr. Speaker, my final question through you to the minister is, will he show leadership and commit to meeting with the wood suppliers to develop immediate access to land, a plan to address this wood shortage? Thank you.
The Honourable Minister of Natural Resources.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. We have opened up Crown lands in an attempt to increase supply for firewood in Nova Scotia. We have done that already. We've done it months ago, Mr. Speaker, at a time when the wood needed to be cut to be dried. We are open to other suggestions in terms of how the Crown can be of use here. But, Mr. Speaker, I need to note for the sake and clarity of the House, 80% of the wood supply is coming off of private lands, Mr. Speaker, not Crown. Crown's ability to impact this current situation is very limited. If the member thinks that government policy is what's impacting this, then perhaps he can go back and explain to his people how the 125,000 green metric tons that he gave to Northern Pulp isn't actually impacting the situation.
The Honourable Member for Inverness.
Mr. Speaker, although it happened, my question is for the Minister of Justice. And although it happened 24 years ago, the Clayton Miller case continues to receive attention in his hometown of New Waterford and certainly right across the province. My question to the Minister, can the Minister give us an update on this case?
The Honourable Minister of Justice.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker, and I thank very much the member opposite. Very important question. In terms of an update, I am currently awaiting the medical examiner's report. Thank you.
The Honourable Member for Inverness.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and I think a lot of people were interested to see that development, to see the medical examiner doing a review. Can the minister give us some indication on timeline for when that report will be presented back to government?
The Honourable Minister of Justice.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker, and for the benefit of my colleagues in the House and for the benefit of everyone listening, both Mr. and Mrs. Miller, as well as the community at large, this is a very important issue for them personally, as well as the entire Nova Scotia community. And all indication that I've received is we are not going to rush this. We are going to ensure that we do everything that we can do to ensure that the medical examiner has everything within his purview to provide us with an accurate report. Thank you.
The Honourable Member for Inverness on his final supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, and certainly without any interest in rushing the Minister or this activity along, but I would like to ask, how would the Justice Department respond to the medical examiner's review should it indicate that something took place that is different than what has been accepted to date?
The Honourable Minister of Justice.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. It's a very, very important question, and it's one that is definitely worth asking in the House. As the Minister of Justice, I am not going to speculate as to what the medical examiner is going to provide in his report. When the report is finalized, the medical examiner will contact me and will also contact both Mr. and Mrs. Miller and explain his findings to them. And at that point, we will then be in a position to make any further updates to the public. Thank you.
The Honourable Member for Kings North.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. My question is for the Minister of Municipal Affairs. Mr. Speaker, the Provincial Municipal Fiscal Review and the Consultative Report Summary have been published, and they are of great interest to every one of our constituencies. On page 3, it says, the opportunities to improve collaboration. The committee found that there are significant opportunities for the province and its municipal partners to work more collaboratively, and a lack of municipal involvement in the development of regulation has led to intense financial pressure in some municipalities. I'll table that quote. Mr. Speaker, my question is, what has the minister done to improve collaboration?
The Honourable Minister of Service, Nova Scotia and Municipal Affairs.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and I thank my colleague for the question. Over the past year, I've traveled to 52 of the 54 municipalities, and I've met individually with the mayors and councils in each and every one of those communities. This coming week, I'll complete all of the 54 municipalities when I meet with Halifax Regional Municipality on Monday evening.
The Honourable Member for Kings North on his first supplementary.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'd like to thank the Minister for that reply. I noticed that, Mr. Minister, in this document on October 31st, there will be a meeting in Wolfville, and in the Valley we have an event called Halloween, and October 31st on a Friday night is not an especially auspicious time for consultation on this report. I'm wondering, and this is of great interest in Indianapolis Valley. In Kings County alone, we have 7 villages, 3 towns, and the municipality. I'm wondering if the minister can comment on why the night of October 31st in Wolfville was selected for a meeting to review this.
The Honourable Minister of Municipal Affairs.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I just want to advise my colleague that the meeting scheduled for Friday the 31st is actually in the afternoon and not the evening.
The Honourable Member for Kings North.
I stand corrected. Thank you, Mr. Speaker. No.
The Honourable Member for Colchester, Musquodoboit Valley.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. My question is for the Minister of Natural Resources. Last week, I met with a group, the Lays Lake Outdoors Association, and they were concerned about signs being put up in the Long Lake, Ship Harbour, Long Lake area. And they didn't know that these signs, number one, were going to be put up, and they felt that they were left out of any consultation in the process. So I'm just asking the minister if he had any idea why they would not have been consulted, I guess, about lands that they have used for a number of years now.
Would the member clarify what kind of signs?
The signs were no more motorized vehicles on the land.
The Honourable Minister of Natural Resources.
Mr. Speaker, I'm not entirely sure offhand the specifics around the signage there, but that very well might be that that is an area where those vehicles have not been permitted. I would have to consult with our parks and areas plan to see exactly what the plan is for that area and what's allowed and what isn't.
The Honourable Member for Colchester, Musquodoboit Valley.
Just one more question. Recently, a resident learned that the Dalhousie Faculty of Management is working in partnership with the Department of Natural Resources and the Department of Environment to organize a Parks and Protected Areas Forum for practitioners to discuss challenges and opportunities related to sustainable recreation. Again, the Lays Lake Outdoor Association have not been consulted at all and were not invited for that consultation. I'm just wondering if it is possible for the minister to go and meet with that association to find ways in which they can use areas that they've used now for decades.
The Honourable Minister of Natural Resources.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. Engaging with the public groups is obviously very important to our government. It's very important for that process. This is the first I've heard of this particular organization, and I'm very happy to take the member up on his offer to meet with those folks and discuss with them what their issues, questions, concerns are.
The Honourable Member for Sackville-Cobequid.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. In April of this year, the Premier informed us that our province has plenty of nurses. He told the Chronicle-Herald that Nova Scotia has a higher-than-average overall nurse-to-patient ratio and mused aloud, and I quote, Mr. Speaker, the question becomes, what more do they want, end quote. And I'll table that from the Premier, Mr. Speaker. So I'd like to ask the Minister of Health. Does the Minister of Health agree with the Premier that there are enough nurses in Nova Scotia?
The Honourable Minister of Health.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. At the present time, we have moved over the past decade from about 61% of our nurses staying in the province to a very healthy 90% of all nurse graduates staying in the province. Staying in the province of Nova Scotia. This year we had a remarkable moment when the 83 graduates at CBU all became employed right here in our province.
The Honourable Member for Sackville-Cobequid.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. And that mostly is due because we have a competitive pay and benefit package for our healthcare workers, Mr. Speaker, something that this government, I know, don't support. Unfortunately, Mr. Speaker, the minister's preoccupation with the amalgamation in over the last year, Mr. Speaker, has allowed a serious situation to get worse. The minister has agreed that there's
order,
a looming
please. The Honourable Member for Sackville-Cobequid has the floor.
The minister had agreed, Mr. Speaker, that there's a looming crisis and nursing shortage. So I'd like to know from the minister through you, Mr. Speaker, what's he doing about the shortage of nurses at the Roseway Hospital that has created an undue closure rate that I think all would agree is too much?
The Honourable Minister of Health with 13 seconds.
Well, thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. Roseway is a bit of an exception in our province where it is nurses that are in a shorter supply in that area. But we know
order,
that...
Order, please. Time allotted for oral questions by members to ministers has expired. We'll now move on to government business. The Honourable Government House Leader.
Mr. Speaker, would you please call public bills for second reading?
We'll now have public bills for second reading.
Hold on. Mr. Speaker, would you please call Bill No. 50, the Halifax Regional Municipality Charter?
We'll now call Bill No. 50, the Halifax Regional Municipality Charter. The Honourable Minister of Municipal Affairs.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I move that Bill No. 50, an Act to amend Chapter 39 of the Acts of 2008, Halifax Regional Municipality Charter, be read for a second time. Mr. Speaker, today I'm pleased to rise in the House to speak to amendments to the Halifax Regional Municipality Charter that supports a request from the municipality regarding capital charges for new development. As I've said since